A new legislative session brings a variety of issues to the forefront. Iowa Press takes you out into the field to profile a trio of subjects: medical marijuana in Iowa, the ongoing fight over the bottle bill, and our state's expansion of broadband internet infrastructure. Stay tuned for this legislative preview special edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you political leaders and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating nearly 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS. This is a legislative preview special edition of Iowa Press.
The 2022 legislative session will likely cover a variety of topics. We begin our legislative preview special on a familiar but contentious subject: the Iowa Bottle Bill. First established under Governor Robert Ray more than 40 years ago, the Bottle Bill now pits retailers, environmentalists, and redemption centers into a long-standing legislative debate. But is reform on the horizon?
By most accounts, Iowa's Bottle Bill has been a success. It helps limit litter on public property and diverts tons of material from Iowa landfills.
The bottle bill today is really the cornerstone of all the success Iowa has seen in recycling. We're one of the top 10 recycling states in the country because of the bottle bill. The bottle bill gave us citizens the ethic of maybe we need to do something more for our environment and what can we do to help the environment.
The bottle bill law is largely the same as when it began in 1979. It's outdated, and many stakeholders say it desperately needs changed, otherwise it may not be sustainable much longer.
I've been peddling change for 20 years, and it's a really hard road to go down.
Sherry Cunningham has owned a redemption center in Pella for more than 20 years. She's hanging on by a thread these days, but remains committed to recycling and her customers.
The penny profit. It's been the same for 40 years. And every year I go up to the Capitol and say, can you do your job? Think about what job you're doing. Think about your business, your employer. If they paid you what you made 40 years ago, could you remain in business? Could you do your job? Because every day that's what I'm being asked to do, is to run my business on the same penny that my mom and dad did 40 years ago.
Iowa's 1 cent handling fee is the lowest of any state with a bottle bill. If you adjust for inflation, the 5 cent deposit from 1979 would be 19 cents today, and the 1 cent handling fee would be 4 cents.
Yeah, so I think we would argue that there may be a more comprehensive, better solution. But if Iowans believe that the bottle bill is something that they'd like to see stay in place, there do need to be modifications to the bill. First and foremost, you know, the safety and sanitation issue. These returns need to be removed from where you want to shop a clean store and purchase your food. Also, we need to have equity amongst the dealers. You know, anybody who sells, if you're going to require anybody who sells to take back, then that needs to be equally enforced amongst all dealers.
The legislature could do several different things. Increase the deposit to 10 cents, adding more incentive to redeem. Increase the handling fee paid to redemption centers and retailers to 2 cents, 3 cents, or more. Expand the containers covered to include water bottles, sports drinks, and others. Allow grocery stores and other retailers to opt out of accepting empty containers. Scrap the bottle bill completely, doing away with container deposits, and encouraging people to use single-stream recycling on their curbs or at drop sites.
Single stream is not the solution. We need to find a better solution than just saying single stream solves the problem. because they've understood it. We've had them here. They've looked and said, okay, now we understand. We've had legislators here. Now we understand. However, lobbies are lobbies, and power is power. And could it be repealed? Yes. Would it be repealed because the citizens want it to be repealed? No.
Iowa is one of 10 states with bottle bills. There are more states currently considering adding deposit laws, so the general trend is to expand rather than to eliminate container deposit systems. Pella Bottle and Can Redemption Center paid out about $250,000 last year to charities and community fundraisers. Everything from dance teams to churches to small-town 4th of July fireworks celebrations. Some individuals depend on cans and bottles to make ends meet.
And these are the people that break my heart. The ones that come in that need the money to survive. So I need to come turn in money because I need to buy medicine. And I have one lady in particular that's what she does. And people give her their cans or she picks them up off the road. You know, I have people that use the money for food or utilities.
Iowa's redemption rate was over 90% at one time. It may be less than 65% now. Dozens of redemption centers have closed in recent years, and the nickel deposit isn't worth the hassle for some consumers.
I think it's important that we look at the 10-cent increase in the handling, or the 5-cent increase in the handling fee to a dime. Really incentivize Iowans to get those back to those facilities. Get those facilities upgraded, as we just said. Get that handling fee upgraded. And the redemption rate in Oregon was at 50% when it was a nickel. And within a year, it went to 90%. And by the end of year two, it went to 95%. So all of a sudden, that nickel became a dime. And people said, oh, wait a minute, I will bend over and pick up that dime.
Iowa State University economics professor Dermot Hayes has studied Iowa's bottle bill. His research suggests distributors could be profiting $30 million or more a year.
I think there is a misnomer that distributors are making significant money off of this. The money that we make is reinvested back into the technology, the gas, the insurance, the workforce that we bring. We also want to work with the retailers to find a solution to increase the handling fee. So we are proposing that we would share in that cost. So in addition to the one penny that we currently pay the redemption centers, we would pay an additional half cent. And we would like to see that the grocery stores, if they want them out of their stores so bad, that they should be able to participate in that process as well.
Iowa is unique in that its system is entirely private. No money ever goes to or from the state government. One recent legislative proposal would have the Iowa Alcoholic Beverages Division oversee the system instead of beginning and ending with distributors.
We have a program that works. Like I said, we need it tweaked, but we believe that the private industry is going to be a lot more efficient than government intervention.
It's a difficult issue. It is. It's complex. You know, one change has, you know, maybe impacts another aspect of the system.
Whether they are Democrats or Republicans, rural legislators or urban legislators, the majority of their constituents support a bottle bill.
Everybody's got to give a little. If you want to not have them at the grocery stores anymore by code, then maybe got to give a little. Distributors, you're going to have to probably pay somebody more because guess what? They didn't get a raise either. The redemption centers have to have the two, and really, I'll go that they really need the 3 cents. And put those things together, that's a pretty easy fix. Yeah, it's a lot of debate, but it's not an outlandish ask. It's not like, let's go ahead and put all the water bottles in, because we can leave that off. That can be 3, 4, 5 years from now when the infrastructure really develops around the 2 to 3 cent increase and the 10 cent handling or the 10 cent deposit. If we did that, I think we'd have a piece of legislation that could move forward, that both sides of the aisle can agree on, that both chambers can agree on, because it's what's right for the state. And expansion is right. I think we should expand, but that can wait. But let's get the grocers satisfied. Let's get the redemption center satisfied. And let's get recovery back up where it should be, because our state should be up at 80% right now.
hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent on broadband infrastructure in Iowa. As fresh federal and legislative funds continue to roll in over the next year, we examine the status and future of our state's internet speeds and broadband infrastructure build-out.
The divide between country and city living is starting to disappear, at least digitally. While over an hour drive from any major metro, the 1,400 residents of the northeastern Iowa town of Elkader have as fast an online connection as any business or home in the state.
We've had fiber in our communities going back to 2007.
In fact, towns smaller than Elkader have very similar stories.
So Stratford's about an hour north of Des Moines, about 800 residents here. We went fiber to the home exchange-wide in like 2004.
For decades, the Iowa Utility Board has used exchange boundaries to identify obligated service areas for telecommunications providers. Each exchange has at least one high-speed internet provider. But for years, the challenge has been growing those networks to reach the truly rural citizens of Iowa and connecting them with modern speeds.
So here's how my normal tour starts right here. This tank is 9.5 feet tall. It's 24 feet long.
Since 2008, Dan and Dorinda Potter have been harvesting maple sap for their family business, Great River Maple. With more than a dozen in-demand syrup products, the main business driver for the Potters was farmers market sales. Traveling to markets as far as St. Louis or as close as McGregor, Great River Maple had a system that worked. That is, until spring 2020.
We had to reinvent pretty much everything we did, because when COVID shut everything down, farmers markets-wise, we had paid for the state fair, we'd paid for farmers markets, we were invested, all that money had gone out. Well, when they shut everything down, yes, we did get that money back after a period of time, but we had no market. We lost 99% of our market, just shut down, and we had to reinvent ourselves.
Great River Maple's situation was not unique. Across the country, millions of Americans searched for how to keep their businesses and families afloat amidst pervasive shutdowns and virtually no in-person interactions. For nearly everyone, the solution was the same: high-speed internet.
We've seen, I'll say, more of an interest or more of that demand in the last 18 months than we did in the previous 18 months. And I think it's working remotely, educating remotely, healthcare visits remotely.
Traditionally, broadband has meant cable or DSL internet access. However, due to the limitations of the copper used to build a provider-to-subscriber connection loop, basically, the longer the loop, the slower a connection becomes.
In our minds, fiber is the future-proof way to deliver broadband.
Dave Duncan and the Iowa Communication Alliance advocate for legislation and funding, specifically to upgrade and extend the connections of rural Iowans. For years, they've pushed politicians to prioritize broadband to less populated areas and not simply use the issue as a campaign talking point.
Well, it was interesting 5 years ago, because that's about when Governor Branstad passed and signed into law the Connect Every Acre initiative that was going to be a recognition that we need to connect more Iowans on the legislative side of things. And at that point in time, they set up a broadband grant program, but they didn't fund it.
In 2018, the state legislature eventually funded the Empower Rural Iowa grant program through Iowa's Office of the Chief Information Officer, or OCIO. During the first OCIO Notice of Funding Availability, or NOFA, a total of $1.3 million of grant money was awarded. 2 years later, after the pandemic hit, the program became supercharged and Iowa joined four other states to use federal funds from the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act, to greatly increase the grant awards through multiple NOFA rounds.
To contrast, in September, the OCIO issued $97.5 million in grants. Fast forward to today, the state just closed yet another grant round, and that's $200 million.
So we have been fortunate enough to win grants in, as the OCIO puts it, NOFA 3, 4, 5, and 6. So about almost $20 million worth of grants. So the goal that we had set forth pre-COVID, we wanted to have all our customers connected within 10 to 12 years. Right. So the benefit of the grants allowed us to shrink that cycle down to about 3 years.
Stratford Mutual Telephone was awarded more than $5 million in Empower Rural Iowa grant funds. That boost will allow them to more than double their footprint connecting Story City, Fraser, Ridgeport, and the outlying rural areas.
This gives us opportunity to scale up our business, to bring in, to introduce ourselves to some new customers. But it's still not a slam dunk. When we look at these areas now, a lot of them are still a 7 or 8 year payback or longer, and that's with the government assistance.
One of Stratford's nearly connected customers is the Des Moines Y Camp north of Boone.
We're best known for our summer camps, so that would be overnight camp, day camp, our family camp programs that fill up the months of June to August. But we also do host conferences, we host meetings, and in many cases they have programs and presentations that they need internet for to be able to upload their presentation or videos or whatever. And in the past, we have not been able to offer that, and as a result, many have kind of looked at more a place to have infrastructure rather than a place like this.
If everyone's serious about bridging the digital divide, it doesn't happen with private investment alone. The paybacks are too long and too great. Using the Y Camp as an example, you're talking about several thousand dollars just for that one customer.
The fact that we are spread across the entire state with sparsely populated areas all across the state makes it very hard and expensive to serve, because a mile of fiber optics could cost somewhere between $20,000 and $30,000 to put in. And that's in the best of circumstances. That doesn't even include all the rocks and the hills and the topography that greatly adds to the cost to deploy fiber.
As of January 2021, the OCIO has awarded nearly $375 million in grants, with the overwhelming majority of it coming from federal coronavirus relief funding. It is Governor Kim Reynolds' stated goal for every part of Iowa to have a fiber connection by 2025. With 4 years remaining to reach that goal, rural Iowa internet providers and their potential customers will need state and federal legislatures to continue funding grants such as the OCIO's program Empower Rural Iowa. Back at Great River Maple, its fiber optic fueled reinvention is connecting practically every aspect of their production to easy monitoring by computer and hyperspeed internet. This 21st century revamp is a great example of how a truly high-speed connection can bring rural life to the forefront of technology.
We are super excited about having automation now in the bush where we have pumps and vacuums and generators.
So that's running. Because we have broadband now, and I can wake up in the morning, look and see, oh, everything's fine. Go back to sleep. I don't have to go down here and check everything now. Yeah. So with the broadband connected to the TV, it's all going to be, I can see everything without having to leave the house.
We're really looking forward to that. It's like hiring more people, because it's information and that's what I need to make decisions. And now we've got something maybe cutting edge. That's kind of fun.
Iowa's neighboring state of Illinois has recently passed recreational marijuana legislation. As Illinois and other states begin to implement rapidly expanding access to CBD materials, Iowa is still navigating the early years of a medical marijuana framework. We explore Iowa's current rules and where business owners hope to grow this burgeoning industry.
Since California first legalized medical marijuana in 1996, 35 other states have followed suit. Now, Iowa and every state bordering, except Nebraska, has some sort of locally overseen program. Illinois is the only border state currently also allowing recreational sales. Iowa's medical cannabis program began with a trickle. In 2014, legislation allowed neurologists to prescribe cannabidiol or CBD oil in certain cases of pediatric epilepsy. Products contained only slight amounts of the psychoactive ingredient THC. With limited guidance from the state, the confusing measure sunset in 2017. Since then, a complete overhaul and incremental adjustments have expanded Iowa's Medical Cannabidiol Act to include more health conditions. Industry stakeholders applaud the progress, but say hard work remains.
The market really kicked off in Iowa December 1st, 2018, And from there, we've been able to supply products to the various dispensaries across the state from then. We've gone through a lot of changes. We've been able to remove a THC cap that used to be on the program, now allowing full levels of THC in any of the products.
Lucas Nelson is general manager of Des Moines-based MedFarm Iowa, the state's sole approved medical cannabis grow operation. Iowa law presently allows for up to two such enterprises, but the other already folded, and a more recent replacement isn't up and running yet.
Every single plant in the entire facility has to be tracked in real time by our electronic system and by the state.
There are only five state-sanctioned dispensaries in Iowa, and MedFarm is the supplier for them all, including competition in Council Bluffs, Waterloo, and Iowa City, as well as their own locations in Sioux City and Windsor Heights.
The number one thing we see in here is pain, whether that's chronic pain or acute pain.
Dispensary manager Stephen Wilson says at first, new cannabis patients arrived on his doorstep as a last resort after they'd run through a slew of other pain medications. Now some doctors suggest trying cannabis before harder prescription drugs like opioids. But hurdles remain, particularly for many income-restricted sufferers.
I think the most important thing to realize is this is an expensive product that is not covered by insurance. You know, opiates are often, very often covered by insurance. And a patient may pay $5 for a bottle of oxycodone, hydrocodone, where out of pocket, they may pay, $50 to $100 per visit.
Currently, Iowa patients must be state certified via a healthcare practitioner and pay up to $100 annually for a medical card to authorize purchase of any products. MedFarm would like to bring the cost down, extend the term, or both.
Well, I was thinking about trying this.
Under 8,000 Iowans are registered as medical marijuana cardholders, less than a fraction of 1% of the state's population. Product choices are limited to topicals and oral forms, like tinctures and pills, but no edibles. Vape oil, once restricted, has surged in popularity, but Wilson says patients are pushing for more.
Most other medical cannabis programs are going to have flower. Iowa doesn't currently allow for us to manufacture or sell flower products. If we're able to do that, prices are going to naturally fall. It's also important to keep in mind that we're a very young medical cannabis program. Our prices are not dissimilar from where Colorado, California, Illinois, Minnesota all started out as well.
A half-gram vape mix of high THC and low CBD sets Iowa patients back about $75 after tax, while in Colorado and California, similar items can be found around 66% less for about $25 per unit. Nearly all other prescription drugs, almost nationwide, are not taxed.
It's very expensive to operate in this state currently.
While MedFarm remains under its original ownership, two of the three other dispensaries in Iowa have changed hands, and for one, their previous Davenport location after those businesses shut down.
They have to buy permits, they have to get licenses, and that all costs money, which takes off of how much profit you get. The black market, they don't have to deal with any of that. Those people have their network, they're making their money, they're not going to change just because the state made it legal.
Ahead of the Illinois Legal Weed kickoff, New Year's Day 2020, Dubuque County, Iowa Sheriff Joe Kennedy said his primary concerns along the state border were impaired drivers and illegal product coming back across the Mississippi River. But law enforcement in border areas like the Quad Cities say the move by Illinois hasn't significantly elevated crime statistics. On Iowa's northwestern border, South Dakota voters approved dual-track legalization in November 2020. Governor Kristi Noem left medical approval intact, but sued on a technicality to keep recreational use illegal. Ultimately, the South Dakota Supreme Court sided with Noem just before Thanksgiving 2021.
It looks to us that the legislature in South Dakota will probably still end up passing some kind of a recreational cannabis program anyway.
Dane Schumann is a lawyer who lobbies Iowa lawmakers on behalf of MedFarm, which involves keeping an eye on pot-related developments nearby.
We see the impact that Illinois' program has had on the medical program because we can track how many patients in Iowa's medical program there are within each county. And if you look over at Iowa's eastern border, the amount of medical patients has completely stagnated since January 1 of 2020 when Illinois' program went live.
Many of us have been in that situation where if we're in pain or someone in our family or that we care about is in pain, we'll do anything to help that.
Industry and medical experts believe one of the biggest risks for patients who choose to engage black market scenarios, besides Iowa's zero-tolerance statutes, is product purity.
What you're seeing here is some of our THC oil that's being distilled. This is important because in our products, we have ratios of CBD to THC. We've developed and honed this process over the several years of operation. Despite that, we're always trying to dial it in to get our yields better, get our purities better, and be able to do this quicker as well.
MedPharm does their own extensive safety testing before paying for mandated state analysis. Due to Iowa's flower restriction, all raw marijuana must be processed into oil before manufacturing, further driving up costs. Nelson says lifting the ban would bring his company closer to a full range of products and help nudge the state toward parity with neighbors like Minnesota, the state which Iowa based its program upon. The alternative to allowing flower in the Hawkeye State for MedPharm could be expansion into friendlier marijuana business climates, which would send additional jobs and tax revenue to out-of-state coffers. Nelson would prefer to grow the business in-state.
We have no intention of leaving, and we're really proud that we are Iowans. We're all from Iowa, have connections to Iowa before we started working here at MedPharm, and think that makes us maybe a little bit more uniquely dialed in to understand what this state needs.
Thanks for joining us on this Legislative Preview special edition of Iowa Press. You can view all of our public affairs features and programs online at iowapbs.org. And be sure to tune in to regular broadcasts of Iowa Press, 7:30 Friday night and noon Sunday. For all of us here at Iowa PBS, thanks for watching.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.